Puki Chikshin Me Tok Chang Rirab Ling Shin Yin De Gen Padi Sange Shin Du Mik Te Uar Ki Joku Nam Dak Shing La Chu Par Shuk Yidam Guru Radna Mandala Kam Nir Yitzayami
Sange
Shudam Soki Chakram La Jangchu Vardu Dakni Kyapsu Chi Daki Chinyin Gipe Sunam Ki Chola Penchir Sange Jupashu
Sange
Shudam Soki Chakram La Jangchu Vardu Dakni Kyapsu Chi Daki chenyen gipe sunam ki Jola penshir sange jupar shok
Sange
Chudang soki choknam la Jangchu vardu dakni kyap suchi Daki chenyen gipe sunam ki Jola penshir sange jupar shok to a meditation. So you can leave the eyes open or closed, whatever you're comfortable with. And then just letting go of anything that you're clinging on to. Disturbing thoughts or excited thoughts, whatever has happened up till this point today or this year or this month. And whatever's coming next. And scan down your body from top to bottom. Starting with the crown of the head and slowly moving down. Release tension as you go. As though this wave of relaxation washes over your body. Feel content and at peace. And after you've scanned down, then start to scan back up. Your physical body stays relaxed and soft, the energy brightening, focus brightening. find your breath. Maybe feeling the whole body breathing, focusing on the chest or the tip of the nose. Just rest your awareness on your breath with a clear, spacious, open state of mind. It's totally content, at peace, infused with compassion. Which is our true nature. Find your breath really brightly again. And clear and focused. And once you have, you can gently let go of the focus on the breath. Expand your focus to encompass your whole body. And slowly the room around you. Classics. So, full screen. Tonight we're going to talk about the types of sustenance and the physical world. It's very interesting. Okay, so first we'll do a little review. So we're studying death in the realms of existence. Does anyone know the Tibetan alphabet that we're studying? That's the Sanskrit. But good, very good. It's Chu Nungpa Zu. Chu Nungpa Zu. Mm-hmm. Who was the Abhidharma Kosha written by? Yes. And does anyone know his date or when he was alive?
1391 to
1414. That is close to Jason Kapa's date. Oh. Master Vasu Bandhu is 350 AD.
Oh. Okay. Sorry, I was thinking of the
first Dalai Lama.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in English, the Abhidharma Kosha is called the treasure house of higher knowledge. And then the commentary we're studying, who remembers it in English?
Illumination on the path to freedom.
Yep. And then in Tibetan? Tarlam Selje. Tarlam Selje. And so this is a commentary by the first Dalai Lama, and his name is Gyalwa Gendun Drup. And what were you saying his dates were?
1391 to 1464.
Yeah. Very close. Okay. Just the 64 is wrong. 74. Yep. Very close. Good job. Okay, so tonight we're going to go over sustenance and a description of our planet. So this is from the third chapter of the Abhidharma Kosha. Drawa se ki nepa yin. Which means beings sustenance by, they live. So it's basically what keeps your body going. And then it's also a general description of our planet. So we won't have time to go through the whole chapter, but we'll go through part of it. So living beings stay here or continue to live here because of sustenance. Beings need sustenance to stay alive. And so we're going to go through the four kinds. Okay, so the first one, say kam gi se.
Kam gi se.
Kam gi se.
Kam gi se.
And this means portion sustenance. So this is the kind of food that you bite into. You bite into it, into portions, and then you ingest it. And then there's two types. There's subtle types. They're called subtle because they don't produce pee or poo. And then there's gross types, which include everything else. So the subtle types, basically, it's absorbed into the body. For example, Bardoas eat smell, and desire realm, pleasure beings and human beings of the first eon eat nectar, or in Tibetan it's called dutsi. So the Bardoas can live off of smell, and smells have to be chopped into sniffs to be ingested. So there are different kinds of dutsis, which are nectar, and there's one kind that is the nectar of immortality, but that's not the kind that we're talking about here. So the one we're talking about here that the desire realm pleasure beings and human beings as the first eon would eat. It's where the ground is made of some kind of clay or goo, and they, when they're hungry, they just scoop it up off of the earth and eat it. And in this time, the crops come up by themselves, and everyone gets up in the morning and gets their food. And then someone thinks, I'm going to get 2 days' worth so I don't have to get up tomorrow, so I can sleep in. And then people start to hoard more and more and build houses to store their stuff in. Then their bodies of light start to turn hard and their lifespan shorten. And we can read, you can read all about this in the chapter. The food, at this point, the food sinks into the body like melted butter poured into sand. So that's the subtle type. Then the gross type is everything else, which is what we eat, basically. Taste, smell, and tangible is what they say kamgise is. So they don't have this kind of food in the form realm, the gross type, because they have no desire for food, which would, what a different life. Our lives revolve around food. Like when we're going to eat breakfast, lunch, dinner, what we're going to have, do we need to go shopping? At least I know mine does. The second say, Rekpa. So this is the convening of three things. So we're going over the four kinds of sustenance. The first one we just went over. This is the second. This is where you have, number one, an object. Two, a contact, sense, power, perceiving it. And three, consciousness. So the object would be maybe some nice-looking food. The sense power located in the back of the eyeball, and the consciousness or awareness of seeing the food is rekpa. So you can catch sight of some good-looking food and it can bring you some kind of joy. Then that joy can sustain you for a while. So that's a second kind of sustenance. Hope can sustain you, and they give a lot of examples of this in the scripture. One is a father wraps up a bag full of dust and tells the people that it's a bag of flour. And as long as they believe it's flour, they live. And as soon as they open it and see that it's dust, then they die. Another example in our lives are you see spouses who die within a day of each other because it's like that joy is gone that's sustaining them. The idea of this kind of sustenance, just seeing the object gives you sustenance. So just being near it. And also what Geshe Michael talks about here is that nobody dies 3 feet from food. There's something that keeps them going for it. So it's like that hope. Like you could be on the brink of death, but you would keep going if you saw that there was food there. There's like something just seeing it that's keeping you going, that's keeping you alive. I think that's the point he's making with that one. And then the third kind, say sempa. Sempa. And this is the movement of the mind sustains you to continue life. This one is basically the essence of karma. This is karma, anytime your mind shifts. It's the movement of things, which is the basis for or which creates and sustains the body's mind, speech, and actions. And it's not really, Geshe Michael talks about this, it's not explained clearly why this is a kind of food, but there's a few different ideas. So someone said that this would always be, this kind of food, this movement of the mind, would always be linked with hope And so as long as you hope, it keeps you moving and keeps you sustained. And then there's another idea, which is that Sempa is what sustains a new rebirth. So it's the food that sustains a new rebirth. It's the main thing that causes your next life, which is karma. The essence of all karma is movement of the mind. So it's food in the sense that it sustains your next life, as though your current life is feeding off the karma of your last life, which is a really interesting way of putting it, very different. And the fourth one, say Namshe.
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 And this is the mind itself. So in the general state of awareness we all have, it never stops. It may be reduced to a low level, but it's still going. You're still alive. So without a mind, there would be no consciousness and therefore no being. The mind sustains a being's existence. So Sempa is the general function and Namshe is the mind itself. Your general awareness is where all the functions reside. So all beings have the latter three types of sustenance, the last three, but only desire realm beings have the first type, the kam gi se. That's only desire realm beings that have that one. So beings outside the desire realm don't need the sustenance of portions. There's no taste or smells in the form or the formless realm. So that's one kind. And then there's another kind of food mentioned in the second chapter of the Abhidharma. And these, I think, we can really relate to. So these are also things which nourish the mind. Say, gi pei. Gyushi. Gipe Gyushi.
Gipe Gyushi.
So gi is by, pe flourish, gi cause, and shi for. So don't confuse these with the four kinds of sustenance. So you translate it backwards to forward, so what would this mean?
Four causes by which you flourish.
Pretty much. Yep. Four things which cause the elements and body to flourish. Yep. Nourishing the physical faculties of your body and the four elements which support your body. So it's nourishing the eye, the tongue cells that allow you to taste, the cells that reside in the ear that allow you to hear, and the nose that allows you to smell, the physical faculties. Then these four things nourish these sense powers, and the sense powers are composed of four energies. There's earth, wind, fire, air. Earth, wind, fire, water.
They don't mention exercise there.
Yep.
So we're going to go to the gym and we can have a massage.
Yep. No, nobody has to work out anymore.
Et cetera.
Yeah. So the earth, wind, fire, and water are names for common things in the world, which refer to specific types of energy which resemble them. They're symbolic, so it's not that these teachings are saying that there's literally fire in your body. It's that they're the foundational energy behind the sense powers. And these four things, we're going to mention these elements. Oh, I see. Yes.
It's a little bit off the, mm-hmm. not off the subject, But so in our rebirth, dying and taking a new life, is it chronological or could be in different times?
How do you mean?
Yeah, if, like for example, I die today, I'm going to be reborn like in the next 39 days. But is it like 39 days of this time, or could I be reborn in the Renaissance, for example, or in the future?
Oh, my understanding is that I think it's 49 days, if I remember correctly. And that's for us to count on in our world. Like, so we know when to say prayers for the being and where they're going. But I don't know if... I don't think you would go, like, back in time. But time's kind of tricky because it's just a label placed on top of increments. You know, yeah, there are different worlds. You could, if you had the karmic seeds, you could see yourself reborn in like a Renaissance time.
Yeah, everything's possible.
I don't know that that would mean that you went backwards to the Renaissance time that we think of, but you can have the karmic seeds to see any type of rebirth.
Okay.
So you could see yourself being reborn just like you'll see yourself as a Buddha one day, if you don't already. You could see yourself born in that kind of world too. And it could be, I mean, if everything is empty of any self-existence and you can project anything, then you could be projecting yourself in the year that, in the years that the Renaissance was, which I don't know when that was, but.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
I actually asked Yeshua this question at 12 Lakes because I was curious about the same thing, and he said that the bardo that's connected with our realm is also connected with our time sequence, so it would not be possible to have a rebirth that is prior to this in this time frame. But if we were in a different bardo for a different realm, let's say we're going to take a different rebirth, then it would be linked to the timeline in that realm. So I don't know if that makes any more sense.
I think it adds on, yeah. And then, so it's interesting because depending on what realm we are born in, we will experience time differently. So once we're born into that realm, it doesn't mean that it would be a different year, but it means, you know, like a day would be like 1,000 days there or something like that. I think we talked about that a little bit up to this point, but we'll talk about it more going forward too. Yeah. So the four elements, these things are going to keep these elements going well, which thereby keeps your organs working well and then keeps you alive. So that's what these things are going to do. And the first one, say, Kasi.
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 And this one is eating food. Is this news to anybody?
Well, Kasi in Spanish is almost.
Oh, yeah, C-A-S-I?
Yeah.
Yeah. So food keeps us alive here in Samsara. For the most part, we have that projection to see food keeping us alive. I mean, you hear of high yogis who don't eat for years and years or something like that, or survive off of like a tiny little piece of rice or something like that. So they have a different projection to see something different. For the most part, here, eating food keeps us alive. The second one, say, lekcha. And this is taking care of your body with massage, baths, etc. Just generally taking good care of your body. And I can say that as I study, the longer I study, I think it's from the practice. Like, I've started to think of my body differently and take care of it in a different way. Not just like, you know, with a different intention. Like, I want to go to the gym and be strong and healthy so that I can do long retreats. I can sit for a long time. So my body goes as long as it possibly can. You know, if I have any control over that, then I do whatever I can to keep it going. So you probably already do, but I notice the longer I study, I start to think about it differently and become more interested in what's going to keep the body really healthy, because that's what supports our whole practice and this, you know, our whole lifetime. So we want to have as much time as possible so we can reach the goal in this life. And, you know, who knows what karmic seeds come up. We can take the best care of ourselves and something still happen, but it probably doesn't hurt.
And it's planting good seeds for our future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. So this one's just generally taking good care of your body. And kunyi is a kind of system of massage from ancient India, and that's one way of doing lekja. And I don't know what that is, actually. But something like taking a nice bath, rubbing certain ointments on your body, these things help the elements in your body and help to nourish your body. And Geshe Michael Roach, he had this famous masseuse come in, and he finally got Ken Rinpoche, who is his teacher, to get a massage. And Ken Rinpoche said that he felt 10 years younger for a couple of days. So, we know this, but it's good to take care of the body as good as you can so that it can support your practice, so that you're setting yourself up in the best possible way. The third one is knee. And this one is sleep. I know this one for me is hugely important. It's like one night not good sleep completely throws me off. Throws off my practice, throws off like everything. So not too much and not too little sleep. And this puts the physical elements into proper order. And we all have felt this. I'm assuming you guys have had bad night's sleep before. And so you can just feel things get out of whack in the body. And when you can't ever perfectly get the best night of sleep whenever you want to, but, you know, we set up things however we can so that we sleep well, we get our bed ready, you know, we get changed early, we take care of everything we need to so we have enough space where we have some quiet time before bed, and then we set ourselves up to get a good night's sleep so that we can wake up and have a clear and bright meditation, and then we can be nice to people during the day. We can practice. We have energy to do things. So it's really important to support a healthy mind and a healthy body. And then the last one is Ting Yen Zen. And this one is concentration is actually good for your body. So if you meditate regularly, maybe around an hour a day, most importantly, you'll be able to see emptiness at a certain point. But it's also in a general sense, it's good for your body. Not having your mind and your concentration torn in many directions or running all over the place, which is what our society really encourages in a lot of ways. There's so many distractions everywhere, especially with TVs everywhere. Like, why do you need to watch the TV when you're at the gas station pumping gas? You can't be away from the news for that long or whatever's on. It's crazy. Like, most restaurants have TVs, phones. We're, Pavlov's Pavlov's dog being...
It dings, yeah.
It dings, and we look, and then we look, and then we look. You know, like, it's controlling our life in a way. It's kind of comical. And it really... Have you guys seen... oh my gosh, what's that cartoon where everybody gets really overweight and they're in these chairs and, like, it's really good. Maybe it's WALL-E.
You know, I was going to say, it's the movie, yeah, WALL-E.
Yeah, it's a really good movie. And then they, like, they say, oh, red's the new drink. And so they press a button and they have red drink. Now they have, like, a cup holder on their little chairs because they're too overweight and they're, I don't know, like their bones can't hold them up anymore because they're so lazy. So they just go around in these chairs, and then one day something happens, and this one guy like falls out of his chair, and I don't know all of it. And then they eventually they like start to plant crops again, and like
well, yeah, because WALL-E finds a living plant. There was, like, no living plants, and so he's the one that finds the living plant, and then, yeah.
It's a really cute movie.
I've seen it. I don't remember it, but...
Yeah.
It's a little robot, right?
Yeah, WALL-E is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eva? Yeah, Eva or Eva is the other
robot. Oh, yeah.
Robot that he falls in love with? Yeah.
Yep. It's really cute. So... I always think of that. Is it that show? But I always think of that when, like, I look out my window when I'm doing the dishes. I have a dishwasher, but I've never used it. I don't know why. So I just do my dishes. And people walk by, and they're walking by like this. No kidding. And I do that sometimes, too. But it's like, that's what the world's coming to. People are walking around just looking at their phones. Even when they're walking across the street, it's crazy. And it's becoming normal, and we don't think anything of it. We just think that's how it is now.
And in my wheelchair, I mean, I'm actually in something that can hurt people, and it's like if I'm in a store or something where I can just veer out of their way, I do. But otherwise, it's like on the sidewalk, there's lots of times when I'm like, excuse me. I'll have to say it two or three times before they realize.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'll just stop the wheelchair and they're still walking towards me.
Yeah.
Hello. So, yeah.
It's crazy.
It is.
So, that would not be concentration. It would not be putting your mind on one thing. Because you're walking, you're trying to read this thing, and probably all these notifications are popping up. So you're completely distracted. So if we're overwhelmed with too many objects, it affects us physically as well. So these things, all of these things, sustain the body, which the body is a polluted one, and it will deteriorate and die. So these things keep the body going, but they're not the goal. The body is still defective. It's an inferior body. We want to get the body of light, the body of an enlightened being. But the function of food here is to keep us alive in samsara, but they're not the ultimate remedies. So the four kinds of sustenance and the four things that are good for the elements of your body, these up here, they're going to sustain the energy, which is by nature defective. We will get sick, we will die, but we can also reach Buddhahood through this body as well. So that's why it's important to sustain it. And it's good to get our motivation straight too, to check in and see if this is any... You know, like some part of our motivation for some of the practices. Because you'll meet Buddhists who are looking to feel better because they meditate or to look better. But that's not the goal, because we're still going to get old. We're still going to die. So just to feel better for a little bit, not not such a great thing. That's not the point of Buddhism. It's not what the Buddha taught as the goal of the path. Will it happen through doing these practices? Yes. So in a way, it's a complete waste to make it the goal when you can make the goal in all of your dedications to reaching full awakening in this life for the benefit of every living being. And then that's what you'll get. You'll also get the other, because that's how the path works. So you might as well just make your goal the biggest one that you can think of. Not wasting time on the small things that are going to get old and die anyways. They're not going to bring us the happiness we want as well. So we don't get hung up on them as goals. Don't get too close to what you're eating and obsess. Just eat well, take care of yourself so you can reach nirvana and Buddhahood. Okay, and now we're going to go into the formation of the world. I think maybe we'll take a break here before we go into this. Seems like a good place to take a break. Did I start recording? Yes. Okay, so now we're going to talk about formation of the world. Okay, so say Jikten.
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 And that's the name of the third chapter of the Abhidharma Kosha. Equals perishable, and 10 equals foundation that we live on. The very word for the world is emphasizing that it's perishable or going to die. So this is how the Abhidharma describes the world started. Say Lungi Kilnor.
Lungi Kilnor.
Lungi Kilnor. So this is perishable base wind energy of mandala. I think, so mandala is a huge disc, or you could say the world. And there are two great presentations of how the world came to be. One in the Kala Chakra Tantra and one in the Abhidharma system. We'll cover the Abhidharma system. Okay, so in the beginning of this planet, there was empty space. Energy, or lung, aka wind, so that's the lung up there, began moving very slowly and picked up speed and velocity more and more until it congealed and formed a diamond hard disk as a base. So this is a picture of what we're going to be describing. Mandala, in its true form or true meaning, means disc. So when you offer a mandala, like when we offer a mandala at the beginning of class, you're offering these discs, and the Sanskrit word for kilnjor is mandala. So in the Abhidharma, they define this planet by being the one that is related to the paradise, which is connected to the paradise where Buddha Shakyamuni is living. So everything is empty, and then there's this wind, and it's still energy circling, but it's going so fast that it's diamond hard. That's the idea. It's still a vortex of wind, but it's circling at such a velocity that you couldn't stop it, even if you tried. And then on top of that, water formed. And gold formed within the water at its lower third. Okay, so you can see the water formed. Mm-hmm. Water formed, and then the gold formed within it. And then below all of that, 7 million miles of wind. all below there. The wind disk is basically like a galaxy holding it up. Pretty much you have to imagine that when you're offering a mandala, this is what you're offering. You're offering the world, and each part of the mandala has a specific meaning, which we're not going to get into here. But basically, we're offering the Abhidharma version of the world. So I can share this with you if you want, Jenny. Or if either of you want to. Okay. Okay. And now, so we're looking at it from the top now instead of the side. So Mount Meru is in the center. You can see it right there. Mount Meru. With seven mountain ranges circling it. Okay, so this is Mount Meru, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and then the 7 is out here. See the mountain ring out there.
In the middle, that there's like a diamond?
Oh, no, that's not true. This is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and Mount Meru is 7.
Oh.
This is just the picture of Mount Meru. And so Mount Meru, it's coming out of the water, and it's the great central mountain of the world. Then there's a mountain range around the outer edge of the Windus made of iron, which is the ninth. So let's see it here. Made of iron out here. Iron mountain ring. The inner mountain rings are made of gold. So all these in here. Mount Meru is made of something different on each side. The eastern side is silver. The southern is lapis or blue. The western is ruby. And the northern is gold. And how it works is the color of the sky around Mount Meru corresponds to whichever side you live on. So if we see blue sky, that means we live on what side? Do you guys remember?
We live on the flip side.
We live on the southern side.
Can you say this just again?
So the eastern side is silver. The southern is lapis or blue. The western is ruby. And the northern is gold. So we're on the south side, because we see blue sky. And the first inner mountain ring is 360,000 miles above the water and 360,000 miles below the water. Coming up out of the water that much and going down below that much. And then each ring of mountains is half as big as you go out. Go out, out, and out. And then between each mountain range is an ocean. And those are called the inner ocean. The outer ocean is between the iron mountain ring and the outer gold mountain ring. So that great outer ocean. and in the outer ocean are four continents. Tradition would say that we would start counting from the south. So we live on the Zambuling continent, the southern continent. We're here. Ling means island, and Zambu is a sound that a fruit from the Zambu tree, when it falls and hits the water, makes. So that's what it's named for. And this whole thing is the world, and we live on Zambu Ling. When we do our mandala offering, we mention all of these. Have you guys done the mandala offering?
Right.
Like the, with the rice and rings and everything? Okay, maybe we should have someone teach that again.
Okay, so so that's the...
yeah, that's what this is.
Mm-hmm. Lama means house.
Yeah.
Many times, well, like three times of these.
Yeah, yeah. So, in one sense, you have to imagine when you do it, when you do the mandala offering. So, either one, it can be the short one, can be the more elaborate one. But you can visualize the whole planet. You can visualize all the flowers in the foothills, all of the wheat in Kansas, all the trees in Sacramento. You can visualize that you're offering all of those things when you're doing the mandala. And in, so for one class like this, like the one that we're in, you're supposed to offer the whole planet. Because this sort of class is more valuable than all the money in America. So to be in this class for 2 hours, it's priceless. Like, what would we pay to remove our mental afflictions? What is it worth to lose our jealousy, or which we can only stop by seeing emptiness directly, and we need someone to teach us to get there. What are you going to say?
I was going to ask you actually that the main purpose of the mandala that we were doing.
Yeah, it's as an offering.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like requesting teaching, requesting maybe help with something that you need help with. You can offer to a specific teacher, to like the whole lineage. So it's pretty much an offering practice.
Is there anything, is it one coming up at the time soon?
Not that I know of. We should ask somebody to teach it again. We haven't done that in a while. Yeah. I wonder if... Yeah, we can ask somebody to teach it. Because all the teachers that are coming here, they know it. They could teach it. Yeah. So... Okay, so the seven oceans, which are between the mountain ranges, are called the seas of sport in the sense of having a good time. The first of the seas of sport is called the inner sea. Is that up there? No. Between Mount Meru and the first ring. Then there's the great outer ocean. And our world consists of the disks, hell, paradises, etc. So there are smaller galaxies made up of 1,000 of these, larger made up of 1,000,000 of these, and then there's major galaxies made up of 1,000,000,000 of these. And there are many of those in the universe. And what is the point of going through this? Why don't we go through these and talk about, in a way, such an obviously primitive perception of the world? And I like that Geshe Michael says that he has a real pet peeve of apologizing for Master Vasubandhu. Because in the 5th and 6th chapters, Master Vasubandhu outlines what's happening in the milliseconds after seeing emptiness directly. So he's not a fool. He had extraordinary visions, extraordinary accomplishments. And us translating the Abhidharma Kosha is like someone very primitive translating the atom bomb. So to Master Vasubandhu, these things came to him quite naturally. He's very familiar with them. So why does he have a chapter on the world where you can fall off the edge of it? And there's 3 explanations. One is that Mount Meru is like Mount Everest. And to the south is India. Probably Russia is drawn in there. That's one popular idea. And the other is that he didn't believe in it when he was teaching it. He knew it wasn't really that way, but he was talking to readers who thought it was that way, so he presented it in that way. And then there's a third possibility that Geshe Michael says people don't really talk about, and it has to do with emptiness. And so we talked about the guy or the girl at work that you don't like, and we all know this example. So there's this person at work, and the boss bursts into the room and starts yelling at this person. And some people look at this situation and they think, oh, that's so terrible, the boss is yelling at my coworker. And some people don't really care. They notice it and they go back to their work. And some people look at this happening and think, awesome, you know, this person's really getting what they deserve. I'm glad the boss can finally see that they're inadequate and doing a terrible job. So the boss and the situation can't be all 3 things at once. So the only way it can be that is that it's each person's projection, it's each person's karmic seed ripening, forcing them to see the situation one way or another. And really, the boss can't be bad and good and neutral at the same time. So logically, that's impossible. So what's going on is that the good or the bad is coming from those that are looking at the situation. So perception is one thing, but my mind is forcing me to see the situation in a certain way. But what is the boss really? Really, the boss is blank. Is there someone with a red face that seems to be yelling? Yes. But some people think the boss is great for yelling, and some people think the boss is terrible and unfair. So everyone's projecting onto her in one way or another. So does that mean that we can choose to project nice onto the boss when we want to? It doesn't. Because when she's yelling at you, we can't just decide that it's pleasant. We maybe want it to be pleasant, but we can't just change it when it's already there. So basically, in my mind stream, there's certain seeds ripening and forcing me to see a situation as bad or as good. So if I'm being forced to see it as bad, is the situation bad when I'm being yelled at by my boss? Yes, it is. It's valid that it's bad. I can be fired. It functions. It is an illusion, but it also functions, and it's also all a projection. I can still get fired. I can still get in trouble. It's artificial, but it works. So if the boss was good or bad from her own side, then everyone would see her the same way. Her or him, whoever it is. So if we decide to have more compassion and try to see the boss in a nice light, that's one type of practice and it can help, but it doesn't change how we're really seeing her. So there's a difference between that and not having the seeds to ever see an angry boss in the first place. So there's a difference between trying to see the situation in a better light and not even having the karmic seeds for the situation to exist at all. So why doesn't the world appear to us the way we're looking at here? Because it's empty and our karmic projection is different. If we had different karma, we would see a different world system. So when we look at a satellite picture and we see the world as spherical, it's no more valid than seeing the world like this, like how we're seeing it on these slides. And it's not that Master Vasubandhu, who's this incredible scholar and practitioner, messed up in this chapter or something like that. So don't think that sort of thing at all, because most likely 100 years from now, people will call us stupid for how we see things. And the enlightened beings of the future will call us primitive, those poor beings that couldn't see that they are living in a tantric paradise. So if we do our practices well and keep our bodhisattva vows, take them, especially if we take tantric initiation, and then we do 8 or 9 strictly correct retreats, our perception will be completely different. And if it's not, then something's wrong. But basically what Geshe Michael says is he thinks that Master Vasubandhu is pulling our leg in a way. So the way we see the planet currently is also a primitive projection. If we were more advanced spiritually, we wouldn't be seeing the world the way that we do now at all, because it doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be the way we see it. So is our perception the only one possible? No, it's not. It can be anything. So that's the point of what this chapter is getting to. I like his, what Geshe Michael has to say about this one too. I've never heard anyone else teach this, but it seems to make a lot more sense that it would be to get us to look at things differently. That seems to be the point of a lot of the teachings, I think, are to get us to see things in a different light and kind of pull us out of how we think things really are.
But there's also some concepts in physics mm-hmm. that talk about that our entire universe is actually just laying on a thin membrane, and that we really are flat, and that there's just all these membranes. So all of the universes in the multiverse are just laying right next to each other, just as thin sheets. So I mean,
so it sounds similar to that they're talking about. Yeah.
Depending on where your perspective is, we could be flat.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's really interesting too, because a lot of the teachings, the more you study them, when you have realizations of them, you know that you're having the realization of what you've been studying because you've been taught it so many times, but the experience is very different. So we might hear these words and think one thing, but then maybe we actually see something similar one day, and then we think, oh, you could describe this as the same thing. You know what I mean? So I think there's that too. Let's see. What the homework says. We're on class 6. so we will do the meditation for this week. And let me look at the answer key, make sure we went over everything. Everything. And then look at the reading.
Is there like an encyclopedia of, like, let's say, I don't know, I have this problem and all the karmic, all the karmas, right? So you've been, to see, or I'm seeing a very angry husband, right? Something like that. And then you go, this is what is happening. And did they ever write anything?
I've gotten little guides like that, like a 2-page handout or something. But I think when we studied karma, I believe it was from the Abhidharma Kosha. So I would think if it was...
I think it was one of the
She brought a little sheet. Yeah.
And it was just mainly based on the 10 non-virtues. But at first it was like, are you experiencing different things in your life? And so you check which things you're experiencing. And then when you unfolded the other side, it showed which one of the non-virtues relates to.
To what?
That was really cool.
So the things that you're experiencing the strongest. A lot, then those, it was a way of like cleaning up your karma, because then you could see, okay, which of the non-virtues seem to be habituated. So I'm guessing there might be
that was really cool.
The one that
maybe someone put it together at some point.
Maybe
compiled it from readings or something like that.
Maybe it's just a very secret book, like hidden somewhere.
Maybe
in Tibet.
It could be.
Because. Yeah, like, for example, you read Karmic Management, right, from Yashimai, and they tell you about different types of karmas that you can, how you can work them.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
But I know Lama Maru gave a handout once that was like 2 pages, and I think Ami did too. I probably have it at home somewhere. What are you thinking of in specific?
No. I just wanted to know if there was like a compendium or something that you could say to be that you could put in your house. Okay, this is happening right now. Okay,
I know, that'd be cool.
This is what I need to clean up.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm seeing this. How do I clean up?
Okay. So we're probably going to end a little early, but we'll do meditation. Just taking some time to relax back into your body. Go with any effort from thinking or contemplating. Feel like you're absorbing the wisdom of the lineage. In whatever way you need it most. maybe in ways that you're not even aware of. And then you start to notice that your body is not solid the way it is now, but it's made of a rainbow light, shimmering and bright. And you see yourself young, around the age of 16. Healthy. Perfect enlightened being. Picture any details, clothing, your hair. What you're sitting on. Of the moon and the sun on top of a lotus. Picturing what your Buddha paradise will look like, what it does look like, however it comes to you. Are you outside or inside? What your surroundings look like, feel like, smell like, their beings. Automatically appearing to help any beings that need help. No effort on your part. The rays of love, compassion, bodhicitta are just flowing from you. Tiny little rods of light. And you're appearing to help anyone who needs. In whatever form they need. No effort, pure joy on your part. And these rays of light start to draw back into your heart, dissolving all appearances around you. Closer and closer, dissolving your own body from the bottom up. Till all appearances are gone. Feel the weight of your body on the chair. Feeling grounded and rooted. And with the background that we have now, I'm going to make our final offering, our closing prayers.
Sashi
Puki Shukshi Me Tov Cha Rira Ling Shi Nyan De Gyan Padi Sange Shing Du Mek Te O War Ki Chokunam da shingla chupa shuk Iram guru radha mandala kandiryatayani
Deva
ti geokun Sunam yeshe sok sokshi Sunam yeshe le jungle Tampa kuni topa shuk